Now. Okay, it's recording.
I'll set mine up now. Okay, I'm going to start up in 3, 2, 1. Hey guys, Harrison, well, I'm back at it once again with a brand new podcast for you, and welcome to episode 10 of the Motorsport 101 podcast, featuring all the latest news, talk, and debate, featuring the world of motorsport, hosted by me, Andre Harrison. And, got some good news and I've got some bad news. The bad news is, this is the last episode of the current series. This is the part where you guys go sad.
Sorry, I wasn't looking at my queue, I was just busy.
Typical. The good news is that because of the overwhelming response and demand, I will be continuing the podcast throughout 2015, because this, as you know, was originally meant to be a university project, and I was only planning to do 10 episodes, in case the eagle-eyed amongst you have already probably realized that this is episode 10. So this was meant to be my last episode doing this. But you guys seem to like the show so much, I thought, hell, why the hell not keep going? So, yay, congratulations, the podcast is now a permanent feature as part of the Harrison 101 network. Hooray!
Yay.
Thanks everybody for listening. Much appreciated. In this show, we have our usual, Mr. Ryan King.
Hello, everyone.
And, yeah, nice Gillen style. And we have, via popular demand, the guy you all wanted back, given how well episode 9 went down. The Kraken is here.
Hello.
Gino Vandenbrock is here as well, AOR Pro Master Creator, / Commentator, / General Troll.
Just a nice plug there. Thanks.
You're welcome. Don't get used to it. So the three of us is back for the second straight time to do another show. If anybody keeps them posted on Manchester United, I will kill you. Because it's like our first ever show, because the first show we ever did, it was in the middle of a United game. Not a good idea. Yeah, my mood changed as the goals went in. It was the West Bromwich Albion game from earlier in the season, in case you really want to look it up. I wouldn't recommend it. We were kind of rusty back then. Anyway, in this episode, we've actually got quite a surprisingly packed schedule, considering there's not been that much news in the last week or so. Well, the big story, obviously, is going to be Force India and Mauritius exclusion. The talk about Mauritius not being allowed to enter their 2014 car, and as a result, Force India becoming the new losers in the court of social F1 media's opinion. The court of human order means Force India have been thrown under the bus, essentially, for not liking this, the idea of Mauritius coming back next year. So that we'll be talking a lot about that. We'll be talking about the 1,000 brake horsepower debate, and should the F1 cars be wider, have more power and whatnot, increase the fuel flow limits and have 1,000 horsepower to make the cars more difficult to drive, and because fans are drunk with power and want better looking cars again. We'll be talking a lot about that as the imminent vote on that regulation is coming tomorrow. We'll be talking about the circuit of Wales and MotoGP related news and rarity on this show. We'll be talking about how the Wales and Donington deal fell through and how it could be the latest in a long list of brand new F1 facilities and F1 and new motorsport facilities that just can't fund themselves and not actually happen. We'll be talking a lot about that. And a couple of, and finally, stories involving Conor Daly and Daniel Ricciardo. So a lot to look forward to on this surprisingly heat show. So without further ado, let's talk some motorsport and let's talk about Force India first. And Force India, not exactly in the best of health right now in F1 terms and in terms of popularity, given that they were the ones who had to vote first on whether Mauritius were allowed to enter this year's World Championship with last year's car. Now, for those guys that may have lost track on this story, it already was revealed earlier in the year. I think it was actually back in December, actually, late 2014, where Caterham, if they were going to make a comeback, they were actually allowed to enter the championship with a 2014 car. Obviously, that hasn't happened and probably won't happen because Caterham are about to sell their assets, like we mentioned on last week's show. But Mauritius had their vote as to whether they could enter in a 2014 car last week. And Force India were the first to vote. Force India said no. And given how the F1 strategy group works, you have to have a unanimous decision in order for a bill to pass through. So it didn't really matter where everybody else fought because the vote was already over because Force India said no right off the bat. And, the reaction was pretty explosive, wouldn't you say, King?
Yeah, I'd say, well, I mean, most reactions to the story is based on people just reading the headline and being angry, saying that, oh, Force India blocks Marussia, not realizing that, I mean, it's not openly stated, but from what has been revealed, it's pretty much par for the course. Force India was going to be the first to vote no matter what, because that seems to be the procedure at the strategy group. It's based on seniority, for like last in, first to vote, and the newest member of the strategy group is Force India.
Indeed, because they were the best of the rest in the championship this year, as opposed to the five permanent members of the F1 strategy group, which are Ferrari, Red Bull, Mercedes, McLaren, and Williams. The best of the rest of the teams in F1 gets the sixth spot on the group, and obviously that was Force India this year, and it, as King mentioned, the latest member gets to decide first up what happens. And yeah, in this case, it was Force India. They went up first, and they just happened to vote no. So of course, because of the Court of F1 human opinion, we all threw them under the bus. When that's
it's like they turned heel, and we just like went.
Yeah, they've gone out and they've hit. They've gone out and they've hit Graham Lewis on the back of the head with a steel chair. out of nowhere, in a shocking and development turn, which obviously pissed off a lot of fans, because a lot of fans, you know, are very strong on Marussia, and you know, they want to see them back. And Force India didn't go down well, but even though on the same night everyone seemed to ignore Bernie Eccleston coming out on the record and saying that it was actually probably three or four teams who didn't like the idea.
Yeah. I find it odd that they voted on Caterham, like, you know, coming back with a 2014 car. But when it comes to Marussia, it's suddenly different. I have to bring up the whole money thing, because that does seem odd. The Caterham team, who didn't score any points, so wouldn't get any prize money, were allowed to join with a 2014 car if they survived. But Marussia, who did score points and had about, what, 34 million ready to go to them, it doesn't matter, even if it was some other team, you know, if it were the three other teams that wanted to vote no, it seems a bit suspicious that they would vote no to that. So you have to kind of think, maybe they are kind of wanting the money just a bit. But of course, there are other reasons, but I mean, even if money just slightly creeps in, it does kind of make it a bit suspicious, a tiny bit corrupt on the teams who want to keep them out.
I think this is more of a personality thing more than anything else, because Force India were always the team that fought for the little guy, and Vijay Mallya was very, very vocal. Vijay Mallya was very vocal about trying to get more smaller teams into Formula One, and how F1 needed the smaller teams in order to survive.
And then he turns heel.
Yeah, and then essentially their team principal goes out and goes the other way in this big vote, and a lot of fans, even Athlete VG, normally the very cynical one on Twitter, was like, that was a dick move.
But the thing is that this vote, it was set to fail. Marussia knew this was going to fail. There was no way that their application was going to be voted yes, because it was a one-page letter with no information about the team on it, no information about who the new owners would be, who would be investing into the team, and how big the investments were. No one in their right mind would vote yes to this.
Exactly.
Are they saying they did it on purpose? Like, they were trying to ride the fans' reaction? Because you've noticed that they've rebranded and they're retweeting everybody's positive tweets about them. Maybe they did that on purpose.
Yeah. I mean, after looking into it, it seems like, because obviously it's Marussia, they know from obviously what happened last year, how vocal fans could get on social media.
Very.
And this is an easy way to rile up the fan base to say, hey, anyone want to invest in our popular team? Because we kind of need the money right now.
I like how the team, which isn't even in this season, knows more about social media than F1 itself.
But I mean, that's the dangerous part about social media, that the teams can just use it to manipulate people.
Exactly. And You're right. I mean, I mentioned this on my on the blog on my website, shameless plug. I wrote about the culture shock of Formula One and why it may not be such a healthy idea to automatically root for the underdog, which is a lot of what British people do. A lot of F1 fans are British. I follow a lot of British people on my Twitter page, and they were all going hashtag save Mauritia, and you know they were like we gotta save Mauritia. And I mentioned this like on two podcasts ago, talking about how. Do you guys really want Mauritia back that badly? Do you want a walking advertisement for the negativity in this sport on the grid next year, getting lapped 5 times next year in the space of a race? Like, is that what you really, really want to see? And you know, obviously people don't care about that. People just want to see the team exist for the sake of it. And, you know, all Mauritia have at this point is their very devoted fan base. Mm. It's like the CM Punk fan base, like Crecon, I'm sure, would mention about how even after he was gone, even a year later, they still chant his name at arenas.
Yeah. I think we got his loudest chant was at the Royal Rumble, and commentators didn't even bother to commentate over it. It was, like, ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Mauritia fan base don't know that they're just being used as a bargaining chip to get investors.
Yeah. Exactly. They're like the abused girlfriend or boyfriend, aren't they?
Mauritius fans all have Stockholm syndrome, in the sense of, like, they really do think that saving the team is the best and logical solution for Formula One, even to the point where they know that Mauritius themselves really have no chance of really being successful. Mm-hmm. This sport doesn't need them there. As much as we need more cars, we need more competitive teams. We don't just need Formula B on the back of the ring, because that's not a good look either, quite frankly. And, you know, they're being used essentially as a bargaining tool to try and get money on board. Like, is that what's going to come down to? Like, you know what? We should start a Kickstarter. Why not? It worked for Caterham.
Or Patreon. get monthly funding instead.
Yeah. Monthly funding. It's like, hey, give us 10 quid for every race we attend this season.
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it. Get £10 for every race we happen to survive. I know it sounds bad that we're mocking Mauritia here, but this is the reality of the situation. They really shouldn't be back in Formula One in their current state. I mean, I've always said it. Give them a year out. Fund them for a year. If they can build a good car for 2016, give them a chance. But right now, there is no gain for anyone involved at this point if you let Mauritia compete, in my opinion. Who wins here? Really?
No, no one wins.
Because how is Mauritia going to make money from the back of the grid?
They're just hoping that they just score points again. That's pretty much
it. Well, actually, I mean, doesn't the prize money only count for the top 10 teams, or does that change if the grid shrinks?
Top 10 teams, right? For
Mauritia would still get money if they compete this year.
Yeah, all they had to do was just survive.
Yeah, yeah.
Can they survive a whole season, though? That's the problem.
Yeah, Probably not.
They have to survive the whole season, and then things are going to change when Haas shows up next year.
Haas.
Yes, that's going to be another problem, because Gene Haas has come in. He's already got a ton of Mauritius old gear from when he bought out the factory.
The American invasion of F1.
Well, you know, it is an American, after all.
Days Without War, zero.
Days Without War, and now they're coming in our beaches, and they're coming here taking our jobs, and insert immigration joke here.
But I mean, the thing is that I feel that if Mauritia could build the 2015 car, they should definitely be here. But if they want special dispensation to run 2014 cars, no, you're gonna have to show that you're a financially viable team first.
I just find it hypocritical that they would accept Caterham's 2014 car, but not Mauritia's. But I do understand that they did only send, like, a small letter saying, please, can we come back? Okay, thanks, bye. Like,
Yeah.
Wow, just seen the FA Cup 6th round draw, by the way, as it come up. Apparently, we've got Arsenal if we beat Preston tonight. Right.
Talking about your hobby, can I talk about my hobby, which is specifically gay anime girls?
No!
Like, like, there's new anime then? Coming out. It's about gay bears. And like, okay, I'll stop there.
My show is being overthrown by hobbyists. I see how this is, people. I see how this is. But should Force India be criticized as heavily as they have been for a situation like this?
Only morally. Because they say they stick up with the small teams and then they do something which seems hypocritical, so...
Okay, but the thing is, there's small teams, then there's Marussia.
Oh, like, dear. they're literally half a year behind, and they have to make the grid by Bahrain, otherwise they're not going to be able to get any money at all. You're only allowed to miss three races, so they've got to be on the grid by Bahrain in April to have any chance at all. So it's a bleak looking situation, no matter which way you cut it for Marussia. And
I talked about this last night. But with this current situation with 18 cars, the last time a series had about the same amount of cars as it does now was the kart series, and we all know what happened to kart. So something to be wary of, that F1 is now down to 18 cars, and we have this situation, you know, there's barely any cooperation.
What happened to kart is... Kart became a technological arms race where teams were just throwing money into it, and Kart was owned by the teams, and then eventually the series went bankrupt.
Mm.
Yeah, all that spending with no income on the other end to back it up. But yeah,
I mean, the cars were amazing. Yeah. But, yeah.
I mean, well, you also have to remember we have Bernie Ecclestone at home. So we got to be like,
welcome to the world of the internet where everything bad that happens in motorsport has to be blamed on Bernie Ecclestone. That's the culture of F1 these days. If something bad happens, you either blame Bernie or you go for the downfalls method of blaming Jack Villeneuve. I prefer the latter, personally, mind you. But
yeah, I like blaming Jacques because that's ironic. People actually take blame Bernie seriously.
Yeah, it's like people. You do realize Bernie is just another employee, right? Bernie doesn't carry any actual power, but he's like the Donald Trump or Sir Alan Sugar figure. Because he's the guy that verbally looks like the boss, they blame him for everything because he's the one that's always on TV. Like, he's not really the problem here, believe it or not. And if anything, Bernie's done a lot more good for F1 over the years than he's done bad. But, you know, it's just because he says things to the media all the time and wants to keep looking at different alternatives and whatnot. It's like, oh, we're going to all point the finger at him when it goes shits up. When it's actually probably more down to the strategy group and the consensus that's causing the problem, like this situation right now, who, you know, Force India are now going to be executed by the court of public opinion purely for something which logically was probably the right thing to do in the first place, because Force India doesn't gain a damn thing by having Marussia compete. Their Marussia's proposal was terrible. It wouldn't make an apprentice sketch, let alone an actual attempt to get into Formula One.
Motorsports 101 is not endorsed by The Apprentice.
And Force India were set to receive money if they said no anyway.
Exactly. And you know what? Force India's now got a crack at getting Mauritius funds. So why wouldn't they go for something like this and eliminate one possible team that could take points off them in the end anyway? Because imagine if you're Sauber, who got screwed out of points at Monaco by Mauritius. Why on earth would you let them compete? Like, they're your closest rival now.
The Monaco screw job.
Yeah, like, Esteban screwed Esteban. But if you're a Force India or a Sauber, you do not gain anything at all from Mauritius, because there's always a freak chance they could score points again, especially given there's only 18 cars on the grid now, as opposed to 22.
And of course, you've got to think about it. It's got the people who finish, the teams that finish last are likely going to be Force India, Toro Rosso, or Sauber. Unless Lotus still can't recover, then it'll be them as well. So.
And Toro Rosso, no one gives a shit about Toro Rosso's car, because we all know that Red Bull are flipping the bill on that one, and it's more for their drivers than it is about the car itself.
So as long as Red Bull survives, as long as Red Bull survives, Toro Rosso survives. So
of course, exactly. And Red Bull's always going to survive. Red Bull's always going to be up the top. So,
and Red Bull has, you know, an outside business to support their team.
Yeah, and it's quite big. You may have heard of it.
yeah, they make more money than Ferrari just selling energy drinks. No marketing scheme, no anything. Just selling energy drinks, they make more money than Ferrari.
And think about how much money they make on marketing, given that everything is freaking sponsored by Red Bull these days. Everything.
I mean, you don't make, like, saying that Red Bull's name is like a brand and that's just them advertising their drinks. The drinks are what make money. They don't make any money from marketing.
It's crazy. So, of course, they can just slap their name whenever the hell they feel like it, because next step for them is world domination. Yeah.
Red Bull is not endorsed by Motorsports 101.
Yeah. But yeah, that is the current essentialist.
But I mean, a lot of people are actually caving into this fan outcry because I know Claire Williams publicly said she'll do whatever she can to help Marussia, even though it's just words.
Is this the Gamergate of Formula One?
it's actually about ethics in Formula One engineering.
Oh God!
and then the FIA. The FIA announced they'll keep the entry list propped open so Marussia could just slide in whenever they feel like it.
Oh, God, sliding into your DMs, sliding into your official list.
There it is. I was waiting for that. Sliding onto the grid, like. Like, okay, this episode is now officially going to be called hashtag MarussiaGate. The title in itself is ironic, and it's probably less awful. Well, maybe only slightly less awful than Jack Villeneuve's musical attempt.
Oh, nice.
We don't talk about that around here.
What was he called on GP4? Because he copyrighted his name, didn't he? So on like Grand Prix 3 and Grand Prix 4, but he had to like write a different name or something. I don't know what it was. Oh.
Can you know more about this?
No.
Great. Sorry.
Yeah. Thanks, Kraken. Well played, fella.
At least I'm not talking about gay anime girls. Come on.
Shut up, Kraken.
Yeah, at least I'm not giving a half an hour long breakdown of Michaela Schifrin's last run at the World Skiing Championships.
Oh, God.
You people and your fetishes.
Oh, my God.
Keep that shit to yourself, people. But, yeah, that is essentially the whole breakdown of the Force India Marussia situation. And, you know, I'm sure that this is going to be ongoing for at least another 2 or 3 months at least, because obviously Marussia are now scrambling to try and create a 2015 car that fits the rules. Mm. Obviously not for Australia, but by Bahrain is obviously the objective, because to compete, you can't miss any more than 3 races. So their aim was to get on the grid by Bahrain. And that's obviously going to be round 4 of the championship. And, yeah, we'll see if Graham Lowden and co can pull off yet another miracle. Because, you know, apparently it's going to be like Digimon the movie where they just build a car out of fans' trust.
No, I feel like this is a sink or swim thing where they're definitely sinking, and it's like the desperate waving of arms and legs before you drown.
I've got like a little pipe and I've just got a little breathe hole. Like.
Yeah, the blowhole is getting clogged with water as we speak. We just don't know it yet.
It's just Force India throwing a bucket over it.
No. What it is, it's Force India putting a cork in the scuba pipe. that's what it looks like at the moment. But even though Force India really aren't to blame, and Bernie came out and said that 2 or 3 other teams were opposed to it too. I could probably guess that Sauber was probably one of them. I could throw that out there right now, more than likely, and be pretty adamant that would be right.
I would say every other team, because none of them had a reason to say yes.
Exactly. But people don't realize that. People say, oh, just save Marussia, because lol. You know, so why not? Anyway, moving on. We're going to be talking now about there's a big vote coming tomorrow, and it's a vote.
Another vote!
Who doesn't love a good vote?
Yeah.
X Factor Star Wars. Taking this to deadlock. But let the fans.
Oh, I was like X Factor Star Wars. I was thinking more Scotland.
We're going to have a referendum. It's going to be at the end of a difficult breakup between us and Formula One teams, because as the teams are going to be voting tomorrow on the future of the cars themselves, as there has been a push by the teams to have more powerful cars and wider cars. Like having wider cars, having a bigger emphasis on aerodynamics again. And the cars being more powerful by focusing on things like increasing the fuel flow rate and obviously the amount of fuel and whatnot, and trying to get the cars nearer to 1,000 horsepower, because the teams think that'll make for more exciting racing and make the cars more difficult to drive. The vote on this takes place tomorrow, and whether this will come into effect for 2017, even though there's even internal strife regarding this, because from what I'm hearing, Red Bull and Christian Horner are pushing to get this done for 2016, so next season, essentially. So, King, want to break down the internal dilemma here that's going on at the moment?
Okay, so at the same time when they rejected Marussia's vote, the strategy group voted yes on 1,000 horsepower, so it moved on to the next level, the Formula One Commission, where it's 26 members of mainly all the teams get a vote. I think some broadcasters get a vote.
What?
Bernie, of course, gets one vote.
Mm-hmm. The Brooklyn
all in all, there are 26 members of the strategy group. Yeah, Pirelli even gets a vote. Everyone gets a vote.
You get a vote. You get a vote. Everyone gets a vote.
So it's this vote will be simple 50-50. Majority wins.
Mm. Mm. So, yeah, I wonder what Sky's going to vote for on that one.
All we know is whoever votes and whoever wins beside Hamilton wins.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, just Sky don't even vote, but just like write Hamilton in the boxes.
I just went into my notebook. Sky does not have a vote. Okay, the members include each team gets a vote. 8 race promoters get a vote. The FIA, Bernie, the engine suppliers, the tire suppliers, the fuel suppliers, and key sponsors get a vote.
Key sponsors? Does Johnny Walker?
You know, like Rolex gets a vote.
Okay, hang on. It's like, hold on, Bernie. What does Johnny Walker think? He's about 1,000 horsepower cars. Do you think we should have more powerful cars? Johnny Walker, who makes some whiskey.
Rolex is like, can we fit a watch on those new tires?
If we can, we're all for it.
It's like, before there was a strategy, before the strategy group became a thing, this was the big hurdle to any new regulation.
So you need, you need 14 out of 26 votes for it to pass?
Yeah, you need 14.
So
yeah.
You need a majority vote. Do you reckon this is going to go through, King?
To be honest, I have no idea, because the voting pool is so varied, you can't really gauge anyone's interest on any particular subject unless you're a professional journalist and you're in these meetings.
Let's put it to you this way then. Has a team got a good reason to veto this?
Maybe, because there were concerns about costs.
And the length of time, wouldn't it? Because if it's for 2016, you've got less than a year, to be honest.
Well, you just launched your car, so you're probably considering what your next year's design is while focusing on developing this year's car.
Something like that. So it is about a year. Probably a little bit less, actually. Because, you know,
but you still got to widen it out and then get the engines prepared, get the back of the car ready for big tires.
Well, no matter what, the engines are staying the same.
it's tweaks to the system, more like the fuel flow rate, and obviously having wider cars and whatnot.
Oh, is that where they're getting the extra horsepower from?
Basically letting the teams increase the amount of fuel they can use during a race, so maybe within the current 100 kilo rule and whatnot, and
it kind of makes you wonder, well, what's the whole big push about efficiency then, if we're gonna increase the fuel rate? I mean, I don't mind a small increase just to make sure the cars aren't freaking lifting and coasting all the time. But yeah, if there's such an emphasis on efficiency, why throw it away?
Well, I mean, it is a big jump. I think it's about a 25% increase. So they go from 100 kilogram per hour to 125 kilogram per hour they're looking at to get 1,000 horsepower.
Yeah, it's basically like playing F1 2014, but constantly having a fuel mix of 3.
This episode isn't sponsored by Comasters. Just
fuck no.
Oh, God.
That is the last place on Earth that would sponsor this shit. I'm telling you. But, obviously it's a big deal. And the teams are clearly pushing for this, and, you know, the teams want this and this and this. Is this a fan thing again? Because it's like, you know, a lot of
this... This is a fan thing, without a doubt. I mean, yeah, the car's looking better. Everyone complained last year about the noses. The car's being louder. That could be down to increasing the horsepower. I don't know whether increasing the horsepower... make it louder.
It probably won't make a big difference because the turbo is still going to be there.
Exactly. Who doesn't have a bit of turbo hiss now and again?
It is the impetus, like, you know, the super license thing was mainly caused by Max Verstappen, but there was miles and miles of other reasons they wanted to do this.
Mm-hmm.
For this, the reason to do this, oh, fans complaining. There are plenty of other reasons why. This opens the door to possibly cash Mercedes, maybe.
Yeah. You let the teams loose a little bit and say, hey, guys, you've now got more power and fuel to play with. Let's see if this changes something. So, you know, it is a fan thing, and the drivers seem to be in agreement. I know Daniel Ricciardo said straight up, basically, he said, I don't mind if we have another 50 kilometers an hour to play with. Yet he doesn't realize that will be taking F1 cars close to 250 miles an hour, which is not going to happen. But even though these cars already are as fast as they were in 2005 when we were with V10s and whatnot.
In 2004 was the benchmark year for speed. I mean, we got up to like 240. No, we definitely got somewhere around 240 miles per hour for 2004 cars.
I'm pretty sure the 04 cars, Montoya set the fast lap in F1 history in terms of average speed. Yeah. Around Monza.
That was peak speed.
That was about 235 miles an hour or something ridiculous like that. And the average speed of that was about 165, which is again just crazy. These cars in a straight line are already getting close to that kind of speed. I mean, the fastest we had this season was 227, and that was from Daniel Ricciardo at Monza in a Renault-powered car, of all things.
It's just like getting back the downforce. So, you know, who knows? I mean, people always, I mean, sometimes I complain and like, look at like the old fastest laps. Like, we saw fastest laps from 2004. Actually, even earlier than that. And it's like, let's get back some of the downforce. So over time, we'll get back to those closer times because, you know.
I mean, but the thing is, do we need to go that fast? Because I know here in the States,
as long as it's safe.
Yeah, the thing is, over here in the States, we're trying to get that too. And the thing is, it is dangerously fast. Like, the Indianapolis Speedway is hoping by, I think, next year or 2 years down the road to set a new track record at the Speedway. The current record is 245 miles per hour for an average for one lap.
That is ridiculous. You don't get that on Gran Turismo 6 these days. Mm-hmm. Like, seriously, like, 245 is dangerously close to 400 kilometers an hour here in what we call the new Imperial system. But we're getting dangerously close to the 400 barrier here in terms of IndyCar. And it's like, at what point does speed start compromising safety again? Because hell, we're already coming off one traffic accident last year, which people won't stop shoving down our damn throats. But,
well, the last time speed was a factor, he broke a trophy. Oh no, wait, that's Scott Speed. No. I think it's Scott Speed.
He had a boner that big. but essentially, yeah, like, at what point do we stop going down the speed road, and at what point does it start impacting safety? Because there's still a lot of old school tracks on the calendar, there's still a lot of street circuits on the calendar, and, you know, the turbo era of 1500 horsepower cars was not that long ago, you know? They're less than 25 years old for the most part. And, you know, I know the drivers want the thrills, they want the adrenaline, and, you know, they think it's cool to go at 240 miles an hour and whatnot. But
they won't think it's cool until someone gets, you know,
of course.
Gets injured.
But these are the same guys that will get around in a circle and pray for Jules Bianchi's health. So at the same time, it's like, you know, we already know the drivers can't be trusted on something like this. And, you know, we mentioned this in a very, very early version of the show where we talked about essentially, you know, the conflict of interest that was there between drivers and safety and speed. And, you know, I'm not sure this is entirely the healthy way to go. And honestly, I don't see how this makes the racing more exciting. I don't see it personally.
The thing is, 1,000 horsepower, the cars are still going to handle the same way. The engineers are not bad at their jobs.
No.
Like, for you expecting to have more exciting racing is expecting the engineers to be bad at their jobs.
And this is the problem. This is what Pirelli have taken so much shit for over the years, even though it's been following orders all along, in the sense of, well, it's like, as Mark Webber called it, Mark Webber called them the showbiz tires, because obviously they're designed to, you know, to decompose and degrade very quickly. When, you know, 10 years ago we had cars where you could do the entire race of one stretch of rubber. Yeah. And that's what hurt Schumacher's career, because Ferrari was so fast they had to change the rules and cripple Bridgestone instead. So, you know, that is the fundamental way that Formula One's changed over the years. And now we're talking about, you know, Pirelli, who have been told, here, make shit tires on purpose to make racing more exciting. And we're in the entertainment era right now. We're in the era where fan power is bigger than it's ever been. And we're in a situation now where people, there is a legitimate debate here going on between whether technology is the way, is the best way to go, or whether it's entertainment. You can't have it both ways anymore on this, on something like this.
The thing is, when F1 finally changes to electronic engines in God knows how many long years, the way the engines are going to be powered is by the fans. Just from their rage and from their demand and from all that stuff. And that's, you know, it's fair enough. Like, you want efficiency, you want clean energy.
And Lewis Hamilton Jr. will win every single race because they'll have 50 fan boosts to play with.
Mm. Yeah, like, I know it's kind of like, it's an unspoken rule at Le Mans where, well, now it's the entire World Endurance Championship now, where the regulations will change to slow cars down if they break the 1:20 mark at Circuit de la Sarthe. If they go faster than that, that's how the rulemakers know that, yeah, it's time to slow the cars down now, because anything faster than that is considered dangerously too fast.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that long ago we were seeing Mark Webber flip another car over, and that was back in the days where they had the Sauber C9 and the Nissan R89, and Minolta had their big-ass Toyota, and they were hauling 800 horsepower, and they were hitting 240 miles an hour down there, and cars were flipping because of how much downforce they were generating.
Yeah.
The thing is, we've seen it before.
The current Toyotas in the World Endurance Championship, they make easily over 1,000 horsepower. They don't look insane on track.
They don't, and Nissan are aiming for 1,250 in their next car.
It's like, engineers know how to keep things in check. They're just going to look like any other race car on track, just with more straight-line speed.
Yeah, and is that what we really want? Is that going to make things more exciting? No, it won't. It'll just make the numbers look bigger. Because, you know, us fans get hard-ons over things like that sometimes. It's like, oh, God, he hit 240. you know, like, I know it's a fan thing, and a lot of these things are fan things, and, you know, it's... It all boils down to this. Are you a fan? I'm gonna borrow Leo Parente, one of my favorite motorsport journalists, on this one, where he says, like, is F1 about the show, or is it about advancing technology? And, you know, it's one of those things where the tug of war is starting, you know, both sides are starting to take the strain now on the tug of war between technology and having a sport which is full entertainment, because that's what we've had for the last few years. We've had the cars be slower. We've had degrading tires. We've had less aerodynamics come in, and as a result, have we had better racing? Not really. Like,
but is it best for business?
I mean, compared to when I started watching Formula One full time, like 2006, 2007, 2008, I'd say the racing is definitely much better than then.
Yeah.
Sure, the cars look better, the liveries look better, yada, yada, yada. But was the racing good? Not really. Is the racing better in this era? Yeah. Do we have to cope with some downsides, like engine noise and how the cars look? Like,
engine noise is not a complaint. People bitch about that for one round and then they stop. Yeah. It's like, it's shit that people pretend to care about. I've always said that when it comes to things like this.
Mm. Like, honestly, when the lights go out, all the complaints go away.
Exactly. Yeah. Nobody bitches when the cars are actually racing. And by the time we got to Bahrain, nobody gave a shit about the engines anymore. It's like people just sucked it up and got on with it. Mm. So, you know, it really is, you know, a bit of a, you know, a problem where I think it's a bit of a catfish for a problem more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, for Formula One is great and all, but I feel, to me at least, the show should come first, because advancing technology, Formula One isn't... There isn't much room to do much, and if you allow so much room, the racing isn't going to be close at all.
Yeah.
Can I make an example? It does seem like a plug, and I'm sorry if it does. But with Pro Mazda, the cars are like 150 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Very simple aero, and the car sounds meh. It sounds really bad. You think you've heard it in the commentary.
Of course.
But is the racing close? Yes. So
it
isn't a matter of making the cars look better, making them sound better. It's a matter of making the racing close, because if it's exciting, people will watch it.
Exactly.
Yes. I'm sorry for the plug, but it's a good example.
Yeah, I mean, it's simply put, it's a matter of competitive balance. And if we make F1 a free-for-all, then we're going to have another jet car. We're going to have Adrian Newey build the X2010 series. It was
the Concorde.
In Gran Turismo. Yeah. And we're going to be having 2,000 horsepower cars, fans sucking cars into the ground, and, you know, people are going to get blown out of the water year to year, and, you know, there'll be a black hole of money being poured into the sport, yeah. And we don't need that. We've got to get the balance right.
Is that fantasy car, would that really be exciting to watch, it going at stupidly fast speeds?
It'd be exciting to watch by itself.
Yeah.
But with another car? No.
No,
not at all. But so, you know, that's not going to be a thing. But we'll have to wait and see whether this vote goes forward or not, and obviously what the engineers decide to do about it once it goes beyond there, if it goes through. But I think it will go through, to be honest. I've said it before. I think the teams want more power, and what the teams ask for generally get. And, you know, the teams have got a lot of pull. Well, you know, Red Bull could easily go to Austria sponsors and say, hey, do you mind helping us out a little bit here?
I feel like this is like trying to compensate. Like, let's try to fix Formula One's popularity problem by not fixing the problem. Mm-hmm. By, like, let's put a Band-Aid on the cars and, like, ignore the real problem. Look, the cars are better, guys.
Rusting bridge. You're just painting over the rust. It's not fixing the problem. It's still going to eventually break if you don't actually mend it.
As Jeremy Clarkson once said, "Oh, that's a nasty head wound. We'll put some teacups on it."
The on track Formula One has no problems. The racing is great.
And we just came off a surprisingly great season in terms of on track action this year.
Yeah, like the only problem I had with this entire season was the point that Mercedes were in their own country.
Pretty much, they had their own postcode compared to everybody else, and that was a problem. But that was always a possibility of happening because that's what happens when there's a new set of rules in F1. Someone who cracks the code. and they get it right straight away, and then they end up being successful for a period of time. It happened with Brawn in 2009, it happened with Renault in 2005. Mm. You know, it's history
again,
shows.
Only lasted for one season, so who knows what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, but the reason it's only lasting longer now is because the rules are so similar to last year. Yeah. In the sense of Berks have not really got a reason to be pegged back at the moment, given the way the sport is at the moment, because the regulations are almost identical to last year.
Yeah.
So there's no reason why Mercs won't dominate this year too, given they had about half a second on the whole field last year.
Yeah. But at least Williams will win a race. You know.
Shut up, Greco. Mercedes are running the table. I've said it here first on this podcast.
Is that a ping pong table? Tennis table?
No, I'll say it on podcast right now. I will write a check for £20 to Great Ormond Street Hospital if Mercedes don't run the table next year.
Oh, he's putting his money where his mouth is. I definitely back that. I definitely see Mercedes winning every race.
So some crazy shit has got to happen for Merckx not to win, because, and let's be real here, if you look at it deep down last year, Merckx won 16 out of 19 races. And the three they didn't win, very nearly won anyway.
They should have won if it wasn't for bad luck or whatever happened in the race.
Yeah. In Canada, both cars had the same problem, and they still nearly won. In Belgium, they took each other out, and Rosberg still nearly won. And in Hungary, they were shocked by their own strategy calls and the fact they panicked and basically gave Hamilton a team order which wasn't necessary because Rosberg was on the better strategy anyway.
And fueled for flames of conspiracy.
And fueled for flames of conspiracy by basically going back on their own words by saying, oh, we don't do team orders at Mercedes. We believe we have a moral duty not to have team orders. And they gave Hamilton a team order. Yeah. Whoops.
They were saying to Hamilton, we don't do team orders, but please get out of the way. Get out of the way. Just go.
Yeah. And even then, in all those situations, they still nearly won those races in question. So it's going to take something pretty major, a complete failure on the team's part for them not to win every single round next year. And people have questioned me on this. And, you know, I've put £20 of my own money on this now. That I reckon Merckx will win all 20 races next year.
Or Williams go ham, and Bottas goes ham. Massa does his thing, which is not much. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
But the thing is, it was recently, I think it was Autosport, where the unrecognized genius, that is Andy Cowell, chief of Mercedes engine program, he basically said that they've gotten so much help this year during testing, because the thing is, Ferrari and Renault, they only have two teams each that run their engines. Mercedes has four.
Exactly. They have doubled the data right off the bat. And now they've got Lotus running their engines now instead. So, you know, they've got even more, room to maneuver where that's concerned. But you know what? I've said it. I put my money on it. I've said it on this podcast. £20 says Mercedes wins all 20 races. £1 per race. And if they do, I will write that check to Great Ormond Street Hospital.
The thing is with Mercedes, they have a team at the top. Well, they have two teams at the top, including themselves. They have a team in the midfield. They have a team in the bottom field. So it's like they have this wealth of information. Like, all these teams will take different steps. So, you know, it'll be very...
But reckon Williams is going to go ham and win.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. The thing is, Mercedes are going to keep winning races because teams are going to keep running Mercedes races. I mean, Mercedes engines.
Yeah, like, if you want to beat Mercedes, you've got to run something else and take the chance. And that's why people are getting on the Ferrari wagon at the moment. I mean, Sky Sports are all in there. They're saying 6-4 onto the Vettel gets on the podium round one.
It has been like this since day one of Grand Prix racing in 1906. If you want to win, you need to be a factory team.
That's the way this sport works, damn it. So yeah, moving on from that, let's talk about some circuits, shall we? And it's going to be a little bit of MotoGP related news for once. So we don't get it very often in this show. I know I promised I'd get the White Live crew on here at some point.
We're going whaling, aren't we now?
Yeah. They're not going whaling. They're going to be on later this week, my friend. We're recording a special show and previewing the World Superbike Championship, so that's going to be a thing. Suck it, Kraken. essentially, we're going to be talking about the Circuit of Wales. And this, okay, I'm going to try and explain this story as best I can in the style of Adam Hills on the last leg, where essentially... You know, I'm going to try and make a funny story out of this. The Circuit of Wales was meant to be hosting the British Grand Prix in 2016. Just one problem. The track hadn't been built yet. I know. It's quite a big problem. The Circuit of Wales was given the rights to the British Grand Prix for 2016 because Silverstone's contract to run the race had expired at the end of the 2014 season. I know. A damn shame, given that was the best weekend of motorsport.
Hey, I say that.
AC. You know, yeah. Silverstone was friggin' fantastic last year. You had the amazing Marquez Lorenzo fight. You had a brilliant Moto 2 fight between Vinales, Callio, and Rabat. And Moto 3 was friggin' crazy with Rins just about beating Marquez over the line as well. So Silverstone was actually gaining traction in terms of popularity as a bike venue because, you know, the weekend last year was amazing. But it was the last year in its contract. So whoops, bye bye, Silverstone. As a result, Wales had the rights to host the venue in 2016. But, obviously, if you've already worked out, there's a race gap to build for this year. So, what Wales was going to do was that they were going to loan the event to Donington Park for 2015. One problem with that, Donington Park is not a Grand Prix standard at the moment and needs renovating. And apparently, according to friends on my YouTube page, their burgers are shy, because that's important too. You've got to have a good burger at a race venue.
But basically what's happened is a track that does not exist signed a multi-year deal, but because the track does not exist, it asked a track that does exist to hold its race until it also exists. But because the track which does not exist, cannot pay the one but does exist, the race now does not exist in Wales. So, you know, it's very easy. And yes, I did steal that from Grand Prix Diary, you know, but the show is not endorsed by Grand Prix Diary.
Yeah. Thanks, Kraken, for stealing my thunder completely in that segment.
I just hijacked the show.
Again.
I'll just sit in the corner.
Stop stealing my shit, Kraken. But essentially, that's the situation. Wales went to the Welsh Embassy, according to the Welsh press. They went to the Welsh Assembly, where they went to London, asking, could we have the funds to help Donington out so we can loan them their race for a year? London said, piss off. And as a result... The agreement that was in place between Donington Park and obviously the Circuit of Wales collapsed. Donington Park said, we didn't get the money from Wales to do this, so we can't host the Grand Prix venue, and they've got to refund all the fans that have paid for tickets already. And now, just like that, Silverstone gets to host the British Grand Prix for the next 2 years.
Which is funny because Wales... Donington would only get 1 year, and then Wales would come in the next. So Wales have lost 2 years now. So it's like,
yeah, Wales have lost 2 years of British Grand Prix for their complete insolence.
They could just sell all the wool. I don't understand why they can't find all the money. Just sell all the sheep.
Well, there's a plan. Like sell the shit. I mean, this is a big deal. This is a £250 million development we're talking about here. It's huge. It was meant to bring 5,000 jobs to the area. It was
How's that even possible?
Yeah, like they were going to build an enormous complex, like a karting track, an indoor track, an outdoor track, a big shopping facility in the area.
In a country where its own language is dying, it wants to create all that. Jesus.
Yeah. It's a situation where they wanted to build an enormous friggin' facility. Like, having a racetrack and then putting Westfield in the middle of it. Westfield, Blue Water, and every major shopping venue on Earth, and put it inside the middle of the Wells facility, basically. That was the plan. And, they were talking about £250 million in investment. They were talking about 5,000 jobs in the region, in the middle of nowhere. And they were thinking about getting possibly 100,000 seats, which is never going to happen. You're never going to fill that. Silverstone had its main grandstand closed during the MotoGP weekend last year, and we're getting about 60,000. You're never going to get 100 in friggin' Wales. Like, not a hope in hell. So this seemed doomed from the get-go, in my opinion. And according to MCN's esteemed motorsport journalist, Matthew Burt, who is excellent, by the way, I'd recommend the follow if you're a bike fan, at Bertie MotoGP, in case you didn't know already. And David Emmett is another one who's great for that as well, at Moto Matters. So follow them both if you're into your bike news. They're both excellent guys. And apparently Bertie's been chasing this story down for about 2 months now, and I asked him about it, and he said it seemed pretty much doomed from the get-go. And that's never a good sign for something like this, something that's meant to be an enormous friggin' investment.
It's weird. It seems to spend so much money, it seems like greed on the part of the Welsh organisers. And it's like almost like, who exactly was funding it?
The Welsh government.
It sounds like desperation on the Welsh government's part to seem relevant in the world, because nobody cares about Wales. I mean
that's the new hip thing. Just host a big motor event just so you become relevant, a la Abu Dhabi, a la Bahrain,
Qatar. Yeah.
So,
yep, all
if
that.
You don't have heritage, buy it.
Yeah. And if all else fails, slip them a check and see what happens. Because, there's also the talk this week about Qatar possibly trying to get an F1 race as well, and they've already got MotoGP as the season opener on their calendar.
It's like now, when I heard the news, I made that tweet, well, call me gay and stone me.
I was like, well.
Well.
You're halfway there.
Yeah, but I'd have to stone half my body, that's the thing. It'd be awful.
But I mean, this reminds me back when the United States got its Formula 1 Grand Prix back, and there were two bids to host the race. One was this new project out in Austin, Texas called Speed City, and it was up against this racetrack in fairly like upstate New York. It's pretty close to the city, called Monticello Motor Club. They already existed. The track was built. Bernie Ecclestone turned down Monticello and decided to go for Austin and Speed City. And this place didn't exist yet. And then 2 years later, they hosted the first event at the Circuit of the Americas.
And it turned out all right in the end. So, sometimes it can work. Because, I'm a huge fan of the Circuit of the Americas. So, like, honestly, it kind of worked out. And it's now actually one of the better Blue Ribbon events on the calendar, in my opinion. Because, America digs F1, really. Yeah. And there's something about the American feel that kind of just makes it work with Formula 1. I don't quite know what it is.
I mean, America had, like, two free races in a calendar at one point, didn't they? Like, in the 70s, 60s.
Yeah, in the late 70s, early 80s, there were three American races on the Formula 1 calendar.
Mm. Whoop, whoop. We were racing in airports, goddammit.
We were even invaded back then. Like, yeah. Jesus. How many days have you not been at war?
They've taken over our airports, and it's like something out of the game Ridge Racer.
Racer. This podcast is not sponsored by Ridge Racer.
And just so you know, I'm pretty sure, during that time, all the American races were street races.
Exactly.
It was like Detroit. Yep. It was Detroit, Dallas, and Phoenix. Yeah. Or it was either Phoenix or Long Beach.
Yeah, so I think it was Long Beach because that game featured in Grid as well. Check out the Grid Let's Play on Harrison101.com.
This podcast is not sponsored by. Wait.
Yeah, shut up. But yeah, that's a thing. So it seems like a big mess, and this whole thing has the whiff of a New Jersey about it, in the sense of it feels a lot like New Jersey, where we thought there's going to be a Grand Prix just outside New York, and they're going to build it. It might be ready this year, then it got delayed this by a year, then another year, then another year, and it ended up pretty much not happening at all. And
yeah, I mean,
it's not even going to happen at all now. Like,
there are some benefits to it, at least. At least it got the funding pulled from the Jersey Shore.
Hey!
Hey. Fantastic banter.
But I mean, yeah. It seems like, it always seems like on paper, this seems like this dream plan that it definitely should happen, because it looks amazing, but no one wants to pay for it.
Isn't that the story of life?
Story of life, blown up to an international scale.
Yep, everything's literally blown up to an international scale. and that's a thing. But yeah, it's a messy situation in Wales. I'm sure, again, we'll get more information on when it comes down to it. What I find it intriguing is that Donington pretty much said that they didn't give us the money to renovate, and Circuit of Wales say it's a public inquiry. That's the problem. So somebody's telling porky pies here. So it's going to be interesting to see how that one boils down as well over the next coming days.
One monumental cock-up by Wales.
Yeah, there's not other way to describe it. It's a monumental fuck-up.
You know that Red Dwarf scene where, you know, they ask for computer translate to all known languages, including Welsh? It's like that.
Yeah, pretty much. You see Crichton's head explode in the background. But yeah, that's...
It's a code blue. It's a code blue.
It's a code blue. Crichton with the Red Dwarf wrenches. Good man.
This episode is not sponsored by Red Dwarf.
Or Dave, for that matter, even though that would be a pretty cool sponsorship to have. Like, Dave, if you're listening, like, feel free. We have more than enough room for sponsors. Like, we have more room than McLaren Sci-Pods.
We need that money. We need that YouTube money.
Hey, man, I'm a student. I need that money.
Yeah, we're not picky like Ron Dennis. We'll take anything.
We'll take anything. We're not fussy when it comes to our Sci-Pods, man. My Sci-Pods need filling. On second thought, let's move on.
What?
Yeah, two final stories to wrap up the show tonight. Turns out, again, I'd like to personally offer a sponsorship to Connor Daly and say, you know what, Connor, we will sponsor you for several pence around. Like, because we love you around and on these parts, but Connor Daly did not get an IndyCar seat. Sacks. Tell us more, King.
Yeah, the team that he was testing for us. Schmidt Peterson Motorsports decided not to pick up Connor Daly for the full season and decided to go with Britt James Jakes for the ride for the year.
Yeah, and then Connor Daly took to his Twitter and basically implied that James bought his city.
Basically, James turned heel. So
he just swooped in, got the seat,
yep.
Seemingly out of nowhere.
He cashed in his money in the bank contract, quite literally, to get that seat. So,
typical Kraken. But yeah, it's a bit gutted for Connor, of course, because Connor is a very, very talented kid. He just needs to be given a decent car, and you know, he'll come to fruition. And the guy just could not catch a break at the moment.
He was almost exploited. Like, you know, oh, do all this testing, and then some other guy just comes in, like, steals the seat. It's like, oh.
Yeah, and, you know. It ruined my potential dream team of Connor Daly and James Hinchcliffe, which made me pissed. I wanted the dream team, damn it.
Still, there's always hope for 2016 Connor Daly. He's always been linked to Haas, hasn't he?
Yeah, he always has. I mean, both him and Rossi. It's looking like that Rossi will definitely get an IndyCar seat right now, though.
Mm. Connor, he needs to find a seat somewhere to get that experience to try and secure that F1.
I mean... he still has one last hope. He's apparently on a reality TV show to get a ride at Le Mans.
A reality TV show? Is he on GT Academy?
No. I think it's called Race to 24 or something like that.
God, we're having to resort to reality TV to get into Le Mans these days?
Yeah, apparently. I mean, apparently the talent pool for this thing is pretty big. I don't have the lineup for me. I have to like look it up. I have to look it up. But I mean, apparently it's gonna be competitive.
It's like Total Divas, but with drivers. Stuff.
Shut up, Kraken. If you give us one more wrestling reference, I'm giving you a 2-show suspension.
Oh my god.
But, yeah, like, essentially, it's not good for old Connor. And, we wish him well, because we like Connor Daly around here. He's generally one of the most hilarious guys in motorsport. Mm. Very, very fan friendly. Talks to everybody. He's a very funny dude. And has very entertaining favorites. I'll say that much. So if everyone can look at his profile, get a peek. And,
get well soon, Connor. Get well soon.
He's not ill.
Oh.
French sake, crackers. But, our final story of the week, it involves F1's favorite honey badger and the happiest man alive, and that is Daniel Ricciardo. King, do you want to disclose the line you gave us about Daniel Ricciardo when I was Skype calling yesterday?
No, I'd rather not.
Okay, either you're saying it or I am, so...
Anarchy in the podcast.
Go ahead, go for it.
Hang on, I'm just going to get the absolute quoted words on my Twitter page, on my phone, as we speak. I'm going to scroll down and find it, because it was pretty darn funny, and it kind of summed up the situation quite nicely, where he says, and I quote... Wait for it. And we joked about this a lot on Twitter as well. Where is it now? Shit. here we go. Yeah, that's the one. It goes, I like Daniel Ricciardo. I don't like the fact everyone sucks his dick. And I quoted that as Brian King, the new antichrist of F1 Twitter. But say, King is not the biggest fan of the Daniel Ricciardo bandwagon, more than Daniel Ricciardo himself, who is literally the nicest dude in the world. And if you haven't seen his appearance on Top Gear from last week, go find it. He was excellent. Not only was he very entertaining, and he owned a Hamilton fan in the background when he said, what's the back of Lewis's car looks like? And he gave him the finger from a distance. And then proceeded to smash Hamilton's star in a reasonably priced car lap record and set a 142.2, I think it was the time in the end.
He was going to say 128. I was going to be like, Jesus Christ.
It sounded like you knew something else bad there for a second. There.
I was on my tabs.
Yeah, it was a 142.2, and according to Hammond, he actually set it on 4 separate occasions. Which is insane, and in terms of just what that man is capable of. So, yeah, Daniel Ricciardo, according to F1 Twitter, is now the fastest driver in the world, purely because of a Top Gear lap time, because that's how the internet works with these things. We're all idiots, for all intents and purposes. So, yeah, what do you make of that Top Gear appearance, fellas, real quick?
It was good,
It was great.
It's an Australian in England. It's always going to be good.
Yep, it's always a laugh, and you know, if you haven't found it, check it out. It's great. It's a great appearance, and we just felt like it deserved the mention more than anything else, and because of King's hilarious one-liner from last night. We were all strung out and tired, and then King came out with that, which I thought was just hilarious and somewhat true, to be honest. Even though it hates me to say it, because Ricciardo is literally the nicest man in the world.
Yeah. I like the note in the quote. I did say I like Daniel Ricciardo.
You did. No one is denying that. No one is denying that at all.
He is the king of banter. You know. Yeah.
It's like, I'm just making sure people know, because I know someone will slightly edit that quote and just cut out the first part.
And then send it to my AskFM page. It's inevitable. It will happen. But essentially, that is just about it for episode 10 of the Motorsport 101 podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Kraken, now's your chance. Plug yourself while you still can.
Until I get banned.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, I do stuff for Apex Online Racing. I make that ProMaster series that everyone seems to be talking about nowadays. And yeah, that's it.
Even the channel name.
Not even the channel name. I'm just like, I think everyone knows by now. I think everyone knows my gig. So it's like...
Yeah. YouTube.com/Kraken and follow at Kraken on Twitter. Yeah.
Join the gag crew. You know, gay anime girls. You know. But gag crew.
Yeah, gag is right. Ryan...
Yeah, you can check out my blog, formulae.nyc. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I'll put something new up eventually.
Yeah, it happens once every couple of months. You may want to check it now and again. Also, you can follow him on Twitter as well, at Ryan Eric King. That's with two Ks. As of a K.
For all my motorsport Michaela Schifrin related tweets.
At least your fetish is funny.
Ouch. I'm sorry, but CM Punk is the best in the world. I just the pants can't maintain it.
See you in a what? See you in episode 13, Kraken. yeah, shut up. And of course, you know where to find me, at Harrison101HD on Twitter, on the website at Harrison101.com, and on iTunes. Just look for the Motorsport 101 podcast. And if you like the show, why not leave a review and a nice positive star rating? That would be wonderful. Support the show.
Sure, it's not sponsored by iTunes.
Actually, yes, it is.
Oh, wait. God damn it.
You and your terrible catchphrases.
This podcast is not sponsored by Michaela Schifrin.
Damn it. And that is a plight to us all. And on that note, we'll wrap this up. From me, from Ryan, and from Gino, I've been Andre Harrison. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.
Sayonara. Bye.
And there we have it.
Hey.
Yeah. Time to tweet something about Michaela Schifrin, ironically.
Yeah!
Yeah!
Shush, Kendra. got a goalless halftime in the United game. We're terrible. We are terrible at football.
Yep. I'm so happy that the MLS season started.